Breaking down the top NBA draft prospects across the globe, you're listening to the Prospect Podcast with Ethan Piotta and Alex Brown.
And welcome back to another episode of the Prospect Podcast. I'm Ethan Piotta, joined by my co-host, as usual, Alex Brown. We're back recording a mock draft lotto primer for Thursday's draft. Alex, how's it going today?
Hey, Ethan, it's going pretty well. I'm excited for Thursday. It's just been very hectic times, of course, and I think it's going to be a very interesting couple of days. I think there's going to be a lot of interesting moves and a lot of teams regearing their rosters for the season.
Deep draft, and we talked about this, in episodes past, almost a year ago. 2021 was going to be a very packed draft towards the top. With that being said, there could be a lot of moves that happen in that lottery, end of the first round, second round, whatever it may be, for teams trying to get in positions to draft in what appears to be a pretty solidly deep class of guys that can contribute to NBA rosters. Starting it off, though, right at number one, we'll get him out of the way. I guess to preface this as well, Alex just dropped his mock draft on Advanced Pro Basketball, detailing every single pick in the NBA draft. Very comprehensive, spent a lot of time on it. It's intel-based, it's prediction-based. Definitely go give that a read. That's kind of what inspired this episode happening as well. And actually, I'll give Alex a second if you want to just talk about that at all, Alex, because it's definitely a great source for any draft fans or NBA fans heading into the draft.
Sure. Well, thanks for the shout, man. It did take a while. It was like 60 pages or something. So it was a bit of a grind. But, yeah, it's always interesting doing the intel side of mock drafts because – you see the similarities across other platforms like, ESPN or Basketball News, Bleacher Report, et cetera, et cetera. And helps get that, media consensus based on what people are being told around the league. And while there are some differences, I think once you kind of get into the intel side, you can see why those subtle differences arise in potential picks. Like, for instance, Basketball News has currently at the time of this recording, Scottie Barnes going fourth to the Raptors because of certain rumors they're putting stock into, that for instance, I may have not put stock into it. So, it's just cool to see, what I heard compared to what these guys heard. I'm sure a lot of it's going to change in the next couple of days, but it was a really fun exercise and definitely worth checking out if you want to see closer to what a lot of teams are thinking.
It's a great point too. Being, I'm sure, more on the outside last year during 2020, we're like, oh, why in the world are like so-and-so going here, falling here? And I think obviously what's super cool about what Alex has been able to get into this year is kind of getting that intel side on what teams view as players and the side that you really don't get from just pulling up game film and watching their pick and roll possessions or whatever.
Exactly. And there are some teams you get more out of than others.
Right.
Except, it always is a crapshoot kind of, but it's kind of a fun exercise. So definitely one I was proud of this year.
Definitely worth putting some stock into too as a reader if you're going to go check that out. With that being said, though, we are going to get into pick number one, which is the Detroit Pistons. And there's been seemingly a lot of smoke about, oh, are they going to trade the pick? They're still open viewing a number of different guys for the number one overall pick. There was a report yesterday about Gilgeous Alexander and six from OKC up to Detroit at one. When all is said and done, I still think they're going to take what has been both of our best players in this draft for the entire cycle. I think one of the few guys in this class that has true heliocentric upside as an NBA player and just elite pull-up shooting gravity. Won't talk about him too long because everybody is pretty familiar with Cade Cunningham. Yeah. As of now, but just his processing genius But yeah, definitely Cade Cunningham for me going one to Detroit. I think they make that selection and it jumpstarts their franchise after a couple rough seasons.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see what him and Killian Hayes can do on the court together. I think that's going to be great for both of those guys to be able to play off of each other and to process the game. Let me rephrase this. So like they both process the game at a very high level. I don't know if we've seen two young guards like Cade and Killian on the same team at this stage in their development that can process the game as well as they can. So I'm very, very intrigued to see how Detroit utilizes that tool. And I think they're like support structure right now with Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, Jeremy Grant. I think they have a lot of good pieces to help develop those guys. Regarding the trade situation, I think, I'm not entirely sure if OKC offered SGA and six, if they did and Detroit said no and leaked it, it would be to continue to drive up the value of that number one pick. Because, I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is an absolute stud. Pairing him with, maybe a Book Knight at six, that'll jumpstart your franchise as well. So I think they're driving up the asking price as much as they can. And that's pretty logical considering they have the most leverage in these situations. And if the Thunder were to make a move for that number one pick, they're going to have to unload a lot of that treasure chest of draft picks that they do currently have. And I think that's what Detroit was expecting.
Definitely. 100%. You made a great point. If you listened to our podcast last year, both of us were pretty big fans of Killian Hayes coming out. Of our talk was, still am. A lot of people have seemingly already written him off after rookie year.
Because he got injured.
Right, because it always happens. But I know we're holding our stock firm and for good reason. No concerns at all on that island.
Yes.
But one of our kind of almost swing skills for Killian, I remember we discussed, was his ability sometimes developing ability to play off the ball. What better person to have, if Killian's still developing off the ball, what better person to play off him and the other guard spot than Cade Cunningham?
Exactly.
I think that is perfect for his development. Cade obviously can take the ball and it makes Killian's off ball development so much more important, but gives him a little bit more time to do so as well. And that could be, as you said, processing wise, tools wise, I mean, you're talking about two really strong positionally sized guards and young guards at that moving forward to kind of turn that franchise around. I'd be really confident if I was a Detroit Pistons fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better.
Moving on though to number two, I think heading into kind of like the pre-draft cycle, if you will, once March Madness ended, it seemed surefire after USC made that March Madness run that I personally thought Mobley had more of a chance to contend for number one than he did to fall down to number three, just from an outside perspective. I ended with Mobley as two on my board. Alex did as well. However, it seems like a lot of what's circulating is Jalen Green to Houston, which isn't, the end all be. It's not an awful,
it's not terrible.
Second option with the way the playoffs went, I think a lot of people are valuing self-creation, guys that can get to their spots, guys that can get a bucket. Jalen Green has that dangerous off the dribble pull-up shooting package upside as a scorer, obviously just a tremendous athlete as well, and he would make for a really fun shot creating backcourt playing off ball with KPJ in Houston. So I have Houston picking Jalen Green at two, not necessarily the move I would make if I was controlling the Rockets, but obviously I'm not. And I think that's what's going to happen is Jalen Green will head up to Houston at that number two overall pick.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus around the league right now. And again, while Mobley is number two on my board, I totally get it. One thing to consider here is the locker room. So Kevin Porter and Christian Wood both have been traded at low kind of below their value. They've been both buy low guys for Houston. because they didn't really fit in locker rooms for other guys. I mean, that's really just the bottom line. We knew they were talented. We knew they could score, et cetera. I think Jalen Green fits alongside those two guys a lot better than Evan Mobley. And I think that's an interesting thing to consider because Mobley's very, very reserved, real nice guy, very introverted, which I like. I mean, that's, you know, closer to me than some of these other guys. But I feel like he wouldn't be in the right environment to be as assertive as he needs to be for his development, because you have guys like KPJ there and maybe Christian Wood. I think bringing in Green shows a stronger commitment to those two guys. Say, hey, you know, we like what they did and we want to build our culture around people like that to a degree. And Green fits right in with that. Not to say he has character issues or anything, because he certainly doesn't from what I've heard, but he's just a little more, I guess his vibe just, it works a lot better over there. It's hard to articulate.
No, I definitely get what it's definitely something definitely to consider, more than Mobley. And it makes sense. Yeah. Because if Mobley's really an introverted guy that's not super outspoken, well, when you kind of look at the track record of guys like Porter Jr. and Christian Wood, they're kind of outspoken about their role, about their touches and whatnot. And that's not necessarily a bad thing whatsoever. That's just kind of their personality. So adding another guy with kind of that mindset into the locker room, like you're saying, in Jalen Green would make sense. And again, that's not, you know, Rockets fans shouldn't be upset that Jalen Green will be the pick at number two. Like you're reaching for somebody else. You're building a really solid core, I think, with Porter Jr. and Green and Wood, three guys that can really get their own bucket when they need to, and will continue to develop as so moving forward. So I'd definitely be confident with Green at two to Houston. However, that does make Cleveland at three my pick for Evan Mobley to go. And obviously not going to spend a lot of time on Mobley either. 7-footer who was my second best prospect in this draft, has to do a lot with his two-way upside, the way he processes the game at 7 feet and his age, playmaking at 7 feet. I think strong shooting projection as well. Does the little things for a big that you necessarily wouldn't see for his kind of archetype, coming out with his touch and his hands, way he processes the game, his second leaps, all that. I think Cleveland gets a future multi-time all-star at the third spot in Evan Mobley.
I agree. Absolutely. I love his fit with Cleveland. I'm not a huge Cleveland guy in general, but having him and Jared Allen, and then their guard tandem alongside Okoro as well, that's a really great core to build around. You have two confident scoring guards that can break down the defense with a linking wing that can really defend and is starting to hit some shots as well. And then you have two rim protectors, that one of which can slide out in space and, you know, play multiple pick and roll coverages, almost playing the four spot for them at times. That's going to be a really tough team. I really like that core.
I don't get why there's an assumption with it seems like, at least with Mobley going three, that they're just going to trade Jared Allen or they're going to trade Colin Sexton. Like, I think Mobley's a perfect complementing piece to what they've already built there. And like you said, with Allen, both can protect the rim. Mobley can act as a secondary rim protector, was absolutely ridiculous from the four spot, and can be versatile, slide out on the wing to a degree. And hopefully as well, moving forward, will then be able to space the floor and kind of play more of that four spot alongside Jared Allen, which, I don't know, that could definitely be a really interesting core moving forward. So I don't really understand the whole, well, if we draft Mobley at three, then what's going to happen with Jared Allen? Like, I think Mobley, the way that he is, you know, positioned, can really play alongside almost anybody in the NBA.
Yeah, and he's going to be on the perimeter a lot too. I think he works offensively more than people realize with Allen, because of his short roll passing, because of his ability to act as the hub and attack off the dribble. He just fits in so well with that team. And I think that's just a home run for them.
100%. Great value at the third pick. Moving on to number four, Toronto Raptors. They're kind of the outlier in terms of teams in this top 10, really, when you look at roster construction, talent. Probably shouldn't be drafting fourth overall, considering some of the guys that they have on their roster, but obviously puts them in a position to, if they nail this pick, be right back in the thick of things in the Eastern Conference next year. That, as you said, we kind of said in the pre-show, there's been some talk about Scottie Barnes. There's been trade rumors with this pick for Ben Simmons and that kind of archetype. And Pascal Siakam's been thrown around inside trade rumors. I ultimately think that Toronto's front office goes with one of the more productive college basketball players that we've seen as a freshman in the last few seasons, and a guy who's proven winner with some primary upside, one of the best linking players in this draft in Jalen Suggs. And I think they don't think twice about it, especially if Kyle Lowry will be moving on in the offseason. Suggs would be a great fit along what they're building with Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. And, you know, if I was Toronto and the Kyle Lowry era is over for us, that was my perception, I would, you know, find a partner immediately and make that sign and trade work and get whatever you can for him and then have Suggs take over. You know, maybe you get another young piece or future draft capital to help fill out that young group. But I mean, it's not like they're going to be trading Kyle Lowry and then they're in a rebuild completely. I mean, they have a strong enough group to win some games. You know, they're not going to – they'd be fighting for an eighth seed at the max. But, I mean, you know, because he's a competitive guy and he – you know, he's a winner, as you said. So I think giving him a setup like they have at Toronto is a really good starting point for his career. And he can play a similar role than he did in Gonzaga. You know, he doesn't have to be the guy that does it all or the centerpiece, but he can certainly get the offense going, link things together, play tough defense, and be a second or third option offensively.
Moving on to number five, a guy that we just kind of mentioned as well, but Orlando Magic picking here, 5 and 8 for the Magic. So potential to really get a strong haul out of this draft with two picks inside the top 10. But all signs really point towards here. If Suggs is off the board at 4, Scottie Barnes to Orlando, and Barnes 6'9", versatile forward, can probably guard confidently 2 through 4. Maybe even the one with his versatility defensively, offer secondary rim protection, strong intangible guy. And obviously the biggest question with him is, will he shoot? Can he shoot? And how will that kind of hinder him offensively? That's not necessarily something that the Magic would be, I think, concerned about considering their contending timeline or stage at this point. And Barnes fits in kind of to what they've built in the last few years with, we mentioned it, but like just the all tools team.
Yeah, honestly. And another thing I like about Scottie Barnes to the Magic is again, the locker room fit with him, RJ Hampton and Cole Anthony. I mean, the energy on that team is going to be pretty ridiculous. And, you know, I'm not the hugest Cole Anthony fan, but Scottie Barnes is a guy that can play alongside Cole Anthony, that's going to get his respect. Yes. You know, Scottie Barnes is a guy that's going to help them get to that vision of where they want this team to go. And he's going to be a nightmare on the court when paired with guys like Jonathan Isaac and Wendell Carter, especially if, you know, if he can shoot the three. I mean, that is the absolute most important thing for his fit and his development, because if he doesn't, he's, you know, a linking glue guy that is going to be your fifth option offensively. And that's a hard thing to take in the top five. So I think going here, they have confidence in his shot developing, or they're just confident in their developmental staff. because it's going to be absolutely huge for his fit with this team alongside Wendell and Isaac.
But moving on to number six, the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this seems like a consensus pick at this point as well, or one that's trending towards it at least. But James Bouknight, which, I mean, I've been high on Bouknight. I believe you have Alex as well since last draft, heading into his sophomore season. But you can argue that he's probably one of the best, if not the best, off-ball scorer and mover in the draft. Can fill it up, and a tremendous vertical athlete as well. He really is. And a guy who, at the end of this top 10 as well, obviously depends on where he's drafted, but someone that has some slight, you know, secondary / primary upside as a scorer, with how well that he's able to get to his spots and with his continued development as a shooter.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for guys in this draft, that are going to be a core scorer for your team, and you have a pick in the top 10, I think Book is your guy. Because he has that killer instinct, that swagger, that self-confidence that's needed in the league to be assertive, to get your own buckets. You know, and he has that. We saw it in his 40-point performance. We saw it in, you know, in just his general workouts from what I've heard. And I think when you bring him onto a roster like this, especially alongside Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Poku, you know, you got a really funky scoring group here that can probably light it up in the future. I mean, I love that tandem of SGA and Bouknight. I think that group handles pressure, and I think that group will defend well in time.
I mean, in SGA, when you watch him, he just puts so much pressure on the paint. He gets to his spots so well. He's one of the best in the league at doing so. And what better than to, you know, pair him with a scorer like Bouknight that can, as you said, just straight fill it up. And still so young, improving, has an alpha mentality. I think it's definitely a good use of capital to get Book at six here. And it's a really good fit in OKC as well. And if I'm not wrong, it seems like that's kind of what the consensus is as well. You have this in your mock, Alex, Bouknight going six to Oklahoma City. So
knowing who Presti is as a GM, he likes guys that can handle pressure, that carry themselves well, and that are going to fit their culture in their locker room the way he wants it, along with their vision. And Book aligns with that a lot more than Kuminga. And just, you know, if you're Presti and you're bringing in guys that you're going to build your team around, your core, you want to bring in highly assertive alpha guys like Bouknight. And he's not a jerk about it either. I mean, he's a nice guy off the court. Fits well in locker rooms. Coaches like him. Teammates like him. I just think for a team that does so much of their due diligence off the court on the intel side, Book is the guy that's going to be more appealing to them than Kuminga. Then on the court, I get the appeal as well. You know, but I think for OKC, the intel is going to be the big part, and that's why they're going to be really interested in Barnes and Bouknight.
And I think, you know, obviously I'd be, if you're an OKC fan as well, super confident. Sam Presti's goes without saying that he's one of the best in the game. And his focus for the entirety of these next few years with the myriad of picks that they have is going to be on the NBA draft. So you'd imagine that they've done their due diligence on the intel side, from a fit standpoint, moving forward on, you know, their future roster construction going forward. And they've gone super in depth in that. To end it off, Bouknight, good fit off court, on court for OKC here. Number seven is where things, I think, could get a little bit uncertain if they already haven't. Golden State is slotted to pick at seven. And there's kind of been a lot of rumors. Davion Mitchell's been floating here. You know, Golden State might not even end up making this pick in efforts to bring in someone that can help them be in more win now mode with a package of, you know, 7-14 and other guys on the roster that they might be looking to move. I think no matter who trades up here, if someone does trade up here, Jonathan Kuminga is going to be the pick. Alex, you have this in your mock as well. Can't really speak about fit because I don't know what team Kuminga will be going to. I just think this will be his range. And it's going to obviously be warranted at the end of the back 10, picking a guy like him with elite tools, two-way upside. Obviously, not as much production, still far away from his ceiling. But when you just think about Kuminga, I know we saw him down in Tampa Bay when he was there watching his brother at the Pro Combine. And you mentioned this as well in your scouting report, I believe, but just like standing somewhere near next to him, like he's a massive dude.
I mean, he's 6'8".
Huge hands, legit 6'8", NBA body, and really someone that you should probably bank on moving forward to at least maximize or get to his upside. I know a lot of people are down and out on him, but elite tools, I'm sticking with Kuminga. He ended at 6 for me. And I think it's a good bet to pick him at 7 here, whoever does end up making this pick.
Yeah, bottom line, I don't think Golden State makes this pick. I think they move it. I think 7-14 and either Wiggins or Wiseman are getting shipped off for another player. I don't know how it's going to manifest. I think chatter's been all over the place with it. But even if they keep this pick, I don't think Davion Mitchell is going to be the guy. I think you want to make a move for another star. You're going to pick a guy that has a perceived upside that's a lot higher than a guy like Mitchell. I mean, Mitchell's much older, doesn't have the tools, but he'd help them win. Kuminga and Wiseman together as a package is kind of an interesting idea. I think if you want to start your team, I think there are front offices that would make a move for that. Whether that's picking up maybe, I mean, I wouldn't do this trade, but somebody like a Kemba Walker, or his value is going to be too low right now for this type of trade, but just picking up someone from a team.
Someone in that range.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you get a Bradley Beal from it like they're talking about without putting in some extra stuff. But I think that you got to make a move for a middling star at least. And I think that's going to be the big challenge that they're going to face, that they're being faced with, because
it's like, who Kuminga's, is that? Who's Kuminga's worthy?
Not going to help them win this year. He just isn't. He doesn't fit on the roster very well. I think Draymond would eat him alive. But in general, I don't think they're making the pick. I think somebody trades up and wants maybe takes Kuminga here as part of a package.
And someone phrased it well, but like it's almost like with this pick, Golden State is in a tough spot. Davion Mitchell being rumored at 7, someone who's probably too close to close to his ceiling, Kuminga too far away from his ceiling for their timeline. So you would expect them to make that pick. It's just a matter of what value they think they're going to end up getting from 7-14. And like you said, it makes a lot of sense, but a package of a younger guy, like two younger guys, like Kuminga and Wiseman with raw athleticism and tools and some of the stuff that other guys don't have is a lot more appealing to NBA front offices than Davion Mitchell, who, although Mitchell will be a productive NBA player, as a role player, doesn't have quite the upside that Kuminga has. So that's more of an enticing package to other franchises. And if Golden State does make the pick, I'm with you in thinking that it's probably on the move in a subsequent move.
Yeah, and a sleeper pick here too, if they do keep their pick, which I think, again, is highly unlikely, it wouldn't surprise me if they did something a little out of character and went for like Franz Wagner or a Moses Moody, just a wing that can link stuff together and help them if they can't find something. I think that's also on the table, but I think this pick gets moved by draft night or in a blockbuster deal on draft night. So definitely the team to watch in the lottery as far as moving.
Absolutely. Second pick for Orlando here at 8. And there's been a ton of rumors here as well with number of guys that could be selected at 8. Who's going to be there? Who won't? I ended up just plugging in Josh Giddey here at 8 to Orlando. There's been rumors about, you know, Memphis potentially in their recent deal for Steven Adams and the 10th pick from New Orleans, that they're moving up to 10 for Josh Giddey. Whether that's smoke or not will be seen. I think Orlando picks Giddey here at 8. I don't love the fit, but they ultimately come along with Barnes and Giddey at 5 and 8, you know, using their draft capital.
Yeah, and Josh Giddey's a really interesting fit here. If you do pick up Giddey, you're asking him to be a wing defender for you. Because if you're playing guys like Hampton and Cole Anthony, the position that Giddey's going to have to guard is a 3 if he's playing with that lineup, or at least just the 2. And when you have a non-shooting guy, well, I shouldn't say he's a non-shooter, but not a very ready shooter. Not a guy
who's not a versatile shooter who's going to shoot off movement.
You know, I get it, but the more you have it in Giddey's hands, the less you put it in guys like Cole, the less you
Fultz, too, coming back.
Yeah, like, you know, it's just, there's Fultz, so many ball handlers right now. And you add Scotty Barnes, who can also handle the ball a little bit, take point forward possessions. I just don't know if there's going to be enough touches for Giddey to really compensate for the value he gives up on the ball on defense and as an off-ball player. I don't think he's ready as an off-ball player. But I do think that teams like him that high. I'm not sure his fit is the best on the Magic, but they may just figure that out later. And I'm not sure he's just the best locker room fit for them, and not for anything that Giddey does. I think Giddey's a great dude from everything I've heard. I just don't know if it's the best for his development. As far as environments go, I prefer Moses Moody here, and I think there's a chance it happens. While his stock isn't exactly high right now, he's kind of that linking wing that can be their third option offensively, that can get to his spots from mid-range, can space the floor for their guards, and play tough defense alongside Barnes, Wendell Carter, and Isaac. I mean, he can defend the 2. He can defend the 3. He could give you a really interesting plug-and-play wing alongside those ball handlers. I think he's a really intriguing option.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for if Orlando was to make this pick, Moody is a way better fit. Finished 6th for me, and I love his fit on this team. And the hope is that they would, I think, probably make this pick considering what's going to be on the board at 8. But like you said, with Moody, someone that's going to contribute defensively at his size with his movement, is going to offer maybe even some self-creation upside down the line in the way that he gets to his spots, off-ball shooting and movement. I think it's a great fit. Hopefully it is something that they're considering pulling the trigger on at 8. But moving on to number 9, Sacramento. This seems like something that has been also trending towards consensus in a way, almost like with Book Knight and the Thunder. These guys have been linked to these respective teams. But Sacramento, Franz Wagner, I know, Alex, you just talked about him to Golden State potentially as something that, you know, as a last resort they might do in terms of just picking a glue guy that might be able to contribute sooner than some of the other guys in this top 10. Yeah. But Wagner, linking piece that has defensive versatility, a little bit of playmaking upside offensively as well, and would be, I think, just a seamless high floor fit in Sacramento with what they're building, and almost kind of a case of best player available.
Yeah, and the general consensus around the league is that Wagner got a top 10 promise, and I think the Kings are the most likely option for that. He just fits on their roster so well. He can be that third ball handler for them. At times he can play the 4, play make up the short role for them a little bit. and fill in some of the gaps on the wing on both ends that they've been missing so far. I think he's a great fit for that team, and I think he's just everything they've been missing on the wing if he can really shoot the ball at a high level, or at least a serviceable level and serviceable volume. I think that's just a home run for them.
For sure. Moving on to 10 with Memphis, I will put Moses Moody here for the Grizzlies. I think there's a lot of giddy talk as well, but Moody seems like somebody that you'd probably try to trade up for if you're this front office in the way that they've drafted in the last few years. You know, and honestly, it's worked out pretty well drafting solid upside, high productive college players, which is seems like something that, you know, is so simple, but a lot of teams fail to do. And Moody here, again, I kind of just explained his upside and what he'd bring to a team like Orlando, similar as well to Memphis in the way that he can pretty much slot in anywhere with his size and what he does on both ends of the floor. And he's someone that could contribute right away as well to this team and offer a little bit more shooting than they potentially had last year, spacing alongside Ja Morant.
Yeah, Moody would be a great fit. If he's here at 10, I think he's the pick. Unless somebody falls that's higher on their board, which I don't expect. I have Corey Kispert here tentatively. Also for similar reasons, because the problem with trading up for a guy like Giddey is the more possessions you have to, you know, give him the ball, the less you have of Ja Morant on the ball. I just don't think you trade up for a bench piece to the 10. You're not buying Giddey to be a bench point guard for you. That's just not their style. I think picking up Corey Kispert or a guy like Moody, of course, if he's available, would be the move because, I mean, first of all, the success of Cam Johnson has empowered teams to say, okay, we're going to take our guy even if he's an older role player because we know he can contribute. And you're going to see that this year with Duarte, and you're going to see it with Kispert, and you're going to see it with Davion Mitchell. But also, you know, Justice Winslow is probably leaving. That's been pretty obvious so far. And Kyle Anderson next year has, you know, they're going to have to pay him. I think Kispert gives you a guy on a rookie contract that can shoot the lights out of the ball, space the floor for Morant, be a strong kickout option, and play serviceable defense. I mean, you put him and Dylan Brooks on the court together, and you let Ja do his thing and find the kickout guy. I mean, he's – or Brooks, you could put Bain is what I meant to say. That's a pretty lethal shooting tandem. And with Jaren Jackson now probably going to play the five, depending on what they do with Adams, that's a really modern team that's going to be able to shoot a lot of threes and get a lot of breakdowns. And I think Kispert's the linking piece to all that.
Definitely. Definitely. You mentioned it. Yeah, Bane and Kispert spacing the floor is a lot better than kind of what they rolled with for the majority of last year, in terms of floor spacing, at least in Kyle Anderson and Dylan Brooks. So it would be interesting and wouldn't shock me at all. You kind of mentioned the Cam Johnson situation, everyone a few years ago. It's like, oh, Cam Johnson was kind of mocked in the 20s in a lot of places, and Phoenix pulled the trigger on him early on. Great. But as we see, yep, Cam Johnson worthy of the pick and was a strong contributor to Phoenix's playoff success this year. So it's kind of a selling
finals
point.
Finals run, man. You can't undersell it. I mean, he was there in the finals. He was a key player.
100%.
Teams are empowered right now for that.
And guys like that are easy. I think you've mentioned this as well. Easy sells to ownership in terms of we're going to draft a guy who isn't going to bust out of the league, who's going to be a part of our rotation, and is going to be someone that is a familiar face to our fan base, even casual fans, for multiple years because he's going to stick with the skill set that he offers. And I definitely can see a lot of that happening, even in the lottery this year with guys like Mitchell and Duarte.
Yeah, it's and the teams that are picking in the lottery make that such a possibility this year.
Right.
I mean, you look at Charlotte has, you know, their LaMelo Ball. You have, you know, Memphis Grizzlies have Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson. The Kings have Fox Halliburton. The Magic have their young group that, you know, we're still waiting to see who's going to be the guy that's really going to emerge. But, you know, Golden State, obviously, Curry, etc. Thunder have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, the list goes on. Teams have their established guys. They need the linking pieces. I think that's why this draft is so interesting and why I'm so happy that top of the class or the top of the draft landed the way it did.
Yeah.
Because teams that kind of need those pieces got them.
Right.
I think that's how it should be. But anyway, moving on to 11. I have Kai Jones here. I think Kai Jones and LaMelo Ball on the same court is just awesome. I think he fits their timeline well. I think the main hindrance for him is remembering he's not a wing. He seems to want to be Kevin Durant. And while I applaud that energy, he's not going to be Kevin Durant. I think he's going to come in, run the floor, beat his guy, finish plays, destroy guys on the roll, and, you know, shoot a little bit and defend in space. I mean, you know, Cody Zeller is going on a free agency. Biombo is. I don't know what they're going to do with Richards, but there's going to be a gap, that five spot, and he's going to have to fill it in the modern, kind of that modern five, modern four spot. So I really like his fit here. I also like Isaiah Jackson here, but between those two guys, Kai is higher on my board, and I buy him a bit more as a shooter, and I think his tools are a little bit better. What do you think about this pick, Ethan?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like another one of those, it's kind of just something that's linked together, is Kai Jones and Charlotte at 11. I finished with Jones at 19, but as you mentioned, would be a tremendous compliment to the way that LaMelo Ball plays and runs the floor, especially at near 7 foot, 6'11", Kai Jones, being able to get out and transition and fill lanes like he does and finish through contact. It's something that Charlotte needs more of. You saw how well the synergy developed throughout the course of a shortened season, no offseason, between a guy like LaMelo and Miles Bridges. And like, you bring in someone like Kai Jones that's high-flying, athletic, is a lob threat, to pair with Ball, who I'd argue is already a top 10 passer.
He was the best rookie. I mean, I loved what Edwards did in spurts, but Ball is, I mean, he's really damn good. And we said, you know, he's going to be rookie of the year. I'm pretty sure we said that on this podcast.
I think we got that one right.
I was like, he's going to come in and he's going to be really damn good. I don't know if I don't think you build a championship team around it, but I think he's really damn good.
Definitely.
And I think Kai Jones just fits that, the culture they're building there. I mean, you have young athletic guys that can just run the floor, that can dunk the crap out of the ball.
Right.
I mean, and Kai Jones is going to fit in with that energy there exactly how they'd want him to.
And like, if he develops as a shooter, like, I mean, that's just,
I mean, his confidence is there.
Potential with LaMelo would be ridiculous a few years from now. Not saying that he will. That's kind of why I finished with him more at 19, was I'm a little bit more sold on guys like Thor, other bigs at least, Thor, Garuba even.
I get Garuba, that. Yeah.
Kind of back and forth on developing outside shots than Kai. But, you know, there is a chance that Kai, with his shooting projections, could get to that point. And then that makes it even all the more dangerous down the line, you know, 2-3 years from now. With LaMelo Ball and pick and rolls and pick and pops.
Yeah, with his release point and his confidence, I think he'll probably shoot at a serviceable level. I don't think he'll be the Kevin Durant shooter he wants to be by any means, but I think he'll be serviceable, and that's all he needs to be when he excels in so many other areas. But that's just a team that's gonna be able to mature together. They kind of share some common issues on the court, and I think a great coach is going to be able to work that out. So very interested to see if Kai Jones ends up landing with them, because I love that fit. I think it's perfect for his early development and just finding foothold in the league.
And one more thing I'll add too is, like, how long has Charlotte kind of been teetering? Not to say Cody Zeller and Biombo aren't like NBA level centers. They are. They've stuck in the league for a number of years.
I mean, I wouldn't sign either of the to the deals.
Right. But it's like, how often have, like, you know, how many, for how many years at least has Charlotte not really had a staple that could develop as a five, or at least a project that they can look to develop at the five, like somebody, something. And Kai Jones at least is, you can say, a project or a stepping stone for the future that they can start to develop and mature, you know, potentially as their future stretch five or whatever.
He's a home run swing there. And, you know, if they want to do that, I applaud that move.
Kai Jones, definitely a riser on draft boards throughout the year. Something I think the Prospect Podcast talked about a little bit last year.
He was a first rounder for me last year.
Absolutely.
He wasn't good. Now he is.
Right. We saw the vision.
I was there.
At 12, San Antonio, I feel like this is a complete wild card. Nothing as far as, you know, fit or what seems to be lingering or anything like that with consensus. And I just took what would probably be my one of my best players available. That's also, I think, realistic for their front office to take as well at this spot in Zaire Williams. Finished 10 for me, get him 12 here. 6'9 and a half, almost 6'10 guy measured at the combine that had, for obvious reasons and off-court reasons and number of things that happened, COVID season and everything like that, a shortened season, an up and down season at that. But I'll just say 6'10 with his, you know, pull-up shooting gravity and projections as a shooter is not something that comes around very often in the league. And everything from Zaire that I've been able to gather from an outside perspective is glowing from his intel in terms of his, you know, his work ethic and the kind of kid that he is. I think it's a really good fit for what San Antonio is building as well at 12, if they're able to land Zaire Williams.
Yeah, you know, Zaire's kind of been all over the board a little bit. I think the biggest win for him was getting that green room invite. That's pretty good for his stock, of course. Plus, guys, you know, they know his name, et cetera, but that's good for him. I don't know if he goes 12. I heard a rumor that he was liked as high as 8, but just liked. Like, he wasn't the guy at 8.
Right.
It would surprise me if he went 12, but I would applaud the move because I love Zaire Williams, which is strange for me because he's not really an analytically strong player. But he just passes the eye test for where you'd want a project wing. And I think with the intangibles that he has, he's a project that I would be all for. I mean,
yes,
it's like you look at the guys that are projects in the league that succeed, they have some of the intangibles that Zaire does.
And some of the measurables as well.
I mean, the tools, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he has them. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think he's going to be, he could be a really good, supporting scoring wing. And he's still young enough to the point where it's just like, I bet on guys like that and the end of the lottery. So I would like the Spurs to do that. I don't think they do. I think, you know, the Spurs are one of the hardest teams to get a read on intel-wise because they're very old school and they keep stuff tight to the chest. I have Giddy here on my mock, but the more I hear, you know, the less I think he's going to end up there. I know the Spurs like him. The question is, you know, where are the Spurs going to end up on draft night? Are they going to move up for Giddy? You know, what's going to happen with this group? They're a big question mark in everybody's eyes right now. But I would applaud a Zaire move. I think if Giddy's there, that's the pick. But, I mean, they got to take a project that has huge upside, in my opinion. And that's Zaire or Giddy. Well, probably, I think Zaire's upside's better, but
right.
Giddy definitely is a strong pick.
Would agree with that, definitely. So we'll see what San Antonio ends up doing. At 13, moving on, we got two more to finish out the lottery. Indiana Pacers are slotted to pick at 13 here. They are one of the teams that's kind of been swirling around in trade rumors. I ultimately don't think they'll make this pick, but whoever does end up at 13 will take Davion Mitchell, kind of for the similar reasons that we just outlined, not to Zaire Williams at all, but in terms of teams betting on kind of these high production, bona fide role player, fringe starter guys coming out of college, like Davion Mitchell could be in the NBA, fresh off a national championship, can contribute defensively, can contribute as a playmaker with the ball in his hands, and somebody that's just going to do, you know, make a lot of winning plays and do the right things on a basketball court for NBA teams. And so I think someone takes that and picks Mitchell here inside the lottery at 13.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're Indiana, you're shopping Miles Turner right now. And if you're shopping Miles Turner and you really want to get a strong return, maybe you include this draft pick for another, you know, I guess for a young asset somewhere else. Pairing a win now point guard like Davion Mitchell with Miles Turner is a great bargaining chip for if you're trading with a team that's trying to win now. And that's what Davion would do well with. So let's say they tried to make a deal with the Warriors, say for seven, just theoretically. If you were to have a high upside guy, let's say they took Zaire here, just for argument's sake, and then they traded Miles Turner, they put him on the table for seven and, you know, cap matching, et cetera. They probably would rather have Davion than Zaire. It's, you know, that's pretty logical. Yes. I think making that pick for another team is what's going to end up happening here. I think it's going to be a team that's in win now mode, because those are the types of teams that are going to want a Miles Turner type player. And whether that all happens as one trade, you know, we're going to find out. But that's definitely a move to watch. And they do lose TJ McConnell to free agency this year. So it wouldn't surprise me if they picked up another guard anyway, just, you know, continue to help out. But you know, they're in an interesting position this year, and I'm pretty sure they're going to make a move.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I don't expect that they'll be here making this pick. And for our last pick in the lottery as well, Golden State Warriors, there's a pretty strong chance as well that, you know, they could be here, but they also might not be, might trade this pick away in some kind of package. However, if they do make the pick, and this could change if they don't make the pick, this is one of those where I think these guys are linked, but Chris Duarte from Oregon, again, fits the mold of the Cam Johnson production and someone that can contribute to a winning team with his shooting and floor spacing, especially alongside Stephen Clay and some of his off dribble creation and on the offensive side of the ball. 24 years old, but with what comes with that is, you know, strong processing speed for the game, and a winning impact as well. And it's worth noting too, with Duarte coming from, you know, the junior college ranks just a few years ago, kind of the journey that he potentially has made from a JUCO guy to now even
potentially a lottery pick.
End of the lottery, which is a tremendous story and kind of just attributes a lot to his work ethic. And the kind of, you know, career that he could have in the NBA. Again, someone that I don't see failing in the league, not a tremendously high upside person that you're going to take a gamble on, but you know what you're going to get in terms of, you know, shooting in his NBA role. And I do think he fills that role. I just value that a little bit lower than 14, but could definitely see how this kind of pick would make sense for the Warriors at 14.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just a coachable, supporting, winning piece. And by the time he hits his rookie extension, I mean, he'll be 27, 28 years old. So you're going to have him in part of his prime on a rookie scale contract. And that is the most valuable part of Chris Duarte going at this point in the draft. Because if you're a win now team like the Warriors, or, you know, depending on the trade you make, which, you know, we're not sure if it's going to include 14. There are other teams that are also interested in moving up for Duarte, I must add. So that's also on the table here at 14, but I digress. He's an easy sell to ownership because he's a great story. He's going to be cheap when he's good, and he gives you a lot of what you want in a creating wing that can play on and off the ball a little bit. He's, you know, again, he's not a high upside guy. He's going to be a supporting player. He's kind of slotted in that high mid rotation range for me, which puts him right in that, you know, in the teens, like mid late teens on my board. But yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting in him. You know, he's going to be solid. He's an easy sell at the end of the lottery. And it would not surprise me if a team moved up for him.
Definitely would make sense. And like you said, someone that's going to fill his role really well, which is why he makes a lot of sense for the Warriors. But I think there's a good chance if the Warriors aren't picking here, I think it's fair to say that, you know, this could be, depending on, again, if it's a playoff team, maybe it's the same situation. But if it's more of a rebuilding franchise that's moved back in for a guy that they like that's maybe slipping, this pick could change. But absolutely, at this point in time, Duarte definitely makes sense for the Warriors.
Yeah, and it makes sense for the teams potentially moving up too. With the rumors I've heard about teams that want to move up, I think they're also kind of win now teams to some degree. So it'll be interesting to see how that deal kind of works out when the guys vying for him and the team that's in the position to pick him are all win now guys.
Right.
It's an interesting position from a negotiation standpoint, much less a roster, construction standpoint.
Right.
So he's going to be huge part of draft night. And very interested to see what happens with Duarte.
Definitely going to be interesting to see how the lottery shakes out. And with kind of the guys that we outlined at 1 through 14, you know, the Jalen Johnsons of the world, Jared Butler, we're not sure exactly where his draft range is, Trey Murphy, Keon Johnson, even Garuba, Thor, the list goes on. Going to be Sharif Cooper. Going to be really interesting to see where they all land in the first round. And kind of where, you know, this draft ends up shaking out, because like you did say, Alex, I think there could be a lot of movement in that top 14 alone, but it sounds like with contending teams looking to move up for productive pieces that can fit their timeline right away, there could be, you know, some shakeup at the end of that first round as well for, yeah, you know, a myriad of guys, McBride and Trey Mann, and, you know, if Kispert were to fall or whoever.
As the second time you've used myriad as this podcast, I really appreciate you using my word, man. You're learning. I appreciate you.
I'm about to cut the second one out. Can't use the same word twice.
But anyway, I think there's going to be a ton of movement. I think the second round especially is going to be a lot of buying and selling. It's going to be a crazy draft, and I'm very much excited for Thursday, rooting for my guys in this class, the guys I've got to know, families I've gotten to know, the coaches, et cetera. It's just the most involved I've been, and it's really cool to see all those guys get their chances here, and I'm super pumped.
Most definitely. With that being said, make sure to check out, as we mentioned at the beginning, Alex's mock that he put out for Advanced Pro Basketball, which details the full 60 picks that will be made in this draft. It's been super cool to kind of see how he's been on more of the inside. And like you mentioned, getting to know some of these guys on a personal level, which kind of adds a different dimension to where you place them on a board or, you know, their stocked teams that you kind of, it makes more sense from your standpoint.
Gotta check your bias. You know,
which is definitely a huge part of kind of the, you know, the whole scouting side. So it's been super cool to see how that's developed. I think I'm personally just super interested because, you know, the trades that could happen aren't all just draft related. It seems like, you know, with, you know, pending free agents and stuff like that, there could be a lot of moves that are tied to guys like, you know, in that range, whether it's Siakam on a, you know, bigger extent, or we've seen Shai Gilgeous thrown around in trade rumors the last few days, or Ben Simmons, whoever it might be, which could then cause a lot of unforeseen shakeup inside this first round.
Absolutely. It's going to be a wild night, and I'm very much ready for it.
Very much excited. We dropped a podcast. Make sure that you support it. You can like it if you enjoyed listening to this podcast. We're on Twitter at Prospect Pod. You can follow Alex for his scouting work at AHB Analytics. You can follow me at Ethan Piotta. Just drop my big board. And
yeah, definitely give that look. Best big board I've seen on draft Twitter, not gonna lie.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it coming from you, Alex. Definitely go check all those things out. Leave us a like if you enjoyed, whatever it may be. And we'll be back with more content.